babies take a few notes.
It was fun.
What's up, Goreheads, and welcome to another episode of Extreme Horror Replay. And this week we're actually doing a film director, micro-budget director spotlight. And on the phone with me from New York City, or not New York City, but Syracuse, New York, I have Michael Allen Fitzgerald. So, Michael, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me on. This is a wonderful opportunity. So I feel there's a certain bait and switch going on. I was told Nancy would be here. I greatly enjoyed her contribution to the show. But
I apologize. Yeah, no, she's actually still at work. So yeah, it is just going to be you and I.
She's like me. She's one of the. She's a nursing, so she's one of the essentials.
Yeah. Well, we are both essentials. I just get home before she does. So now you and I have talked a little bit over Instagram, and I know that, as I said at the start of the show, that you are a small film or short film, a micro budget director, but why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Okay. When I was a kid, generally the geek interests, comic books, role playing games. From that, I learned.
And now you're still into that too, because I've seen
I've seen
your posts.
As you regularly see, I'm still into comic books, still into role playing games. But the key for that, as to my eventual interest in filmmaking, is learning about reading stories, learning about stories through comic books, both through dialogue and visuals.
Right.
Getting that, understanding that language. And then later on with role-playing, I was often the dungeon master. Very little was I the player. So
it leads to...
A lot of what you're doing is what you do as a director, constructing the scenes.
Right.
You're determining the course of actions. And then unfortunately, as I discovered, the one variable... was the players, who you could spend all this time constructing an adventure, and then your players decide to be a bunch of murder hobos and ruin your finely crafted, all those little details, the subtext that you wrote into it.
So you almost have to, you as the dungeon master almost have to play around the characters.
Oh yes, I'm every other, and then portraying every other character.
Right.
So... in a way, we're all acting. At one point, I realized, wait, if I made films and I wrote scripts, it would remove the player variable because I would be telling them what to say and what to do. And if you're a dungeon master, you do enjoy that sense of power. And I figured out there's a bigger power to be had over people, and that's directing them.
Right.
So I got... my friend's interested in doing some, now this is back in my teens, just like we would do just backyard stuff.
Okay.
Straight on VHS, all edited in camera. Had a lot of fun doing that.
And sometimes that's the funnest part about it, is just learning your way through it as you go on a VHS or on a DVD recorder or something like that.
Oh, without a doubt. Learning has always been the most rewarding part of it. Obviously sometimes the most challenging part of it, because the only way we actually ever learn are through our mistakes.
Yeah.
Which is what I consider my first feature film, Victor Juliet's Director's Cut. But back in that time, the time I was discussing shooting on the VHS.
Okay.
Got out of it. It was something we did for fun, but
And all kids probably usually do. So, I mean, it's justifiable.
Oh, yeah. So, I still enjoy watching movies. Still enjoy particularly horror movies.
Right.
Had a great love for, you were probably as well as the age of the video stores, renting films.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-internet days, not having any idea in advance what films were coming out, when they were released, who was in them, the subject, anything. You just walk into the store and suddenly, hey, there's a new box on the shelf.
And there's the box art. Always got to go to the new releases first.
So, speaking of box art, we had this, remember when not only were there the mom and pop video stores, but other stores would like have a department in their store and start renting out videos, even if it didn't make sense for whatever the business was. Remember Ames, the department store had their own video rentals.
Yep.
Wegmans, like grocery stores, would have their own video rentals.
I think Kroger did for a while.
Yeah. There was this one in the pharmacy of all places, and they would regularly get new film.
Yeah.
It was released new to me and my friends. And this is where we go back to the discussing the cover art. So, in the 90s, Charles Band of Full Moon Entertainment, maker of Puppet Master and other fine films, put together a deal with Paramount Pictures distribute these Full Moon films.
Okay.
So, Charles Band got a regular source of income for budgets for films and got some great production value out of on the covers. And Paramount had a regular product release. So, some of those, I mean, back in the thing I miss most about those days are the painted covers. A painted cover to me, I just enjoy, I mean, really takes me back to that era. That's something barely ever see anymore.
Yeah. So now it's all photoshopped.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Or it's the same, I know you've seen it. It's the woman crawling across the ground with the one hand outreached.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they've proven that's been in use on at least 7 different films.
I could picture a couple of them, so yeah.
Yeah. So got into those. Got into the heyday of the Paramount era, Full Moon. But I think one of the keys that got me, that started the germination of my interest in becoming a filmmaker myself, was the Videodrome, the Video Zone.
Okay.
The behind the scenes. And they always made it look, not only, it seemed attainable.
Uh-huh.
It seemed fun, and I had a very limited film vocabulary at the time. Even just those glimpses, to me, goes, oh, okay.
You're thinking to yourself,
constructed.
You're thinking to yourself, you could do this. Just kind of seeing, yeah.
Yes. So, I actually was a huge Full Moon fan. In fact, I think it was a GeoCities. Do you remember those?
Yeah. Barely. But yeah.
Called Full Moon Fanatic. And it was everything I could find about Full Moon that I could pull from anywhere, old newsletters, descriptions and box. I just listed every bit of information I could possibly find on Full Moon.
Okay.
And learn more about it. Still then, I wasn't there yet. Just wasn't there. Friend of mine, very good friend of mine, in fact, he acted in my first feature film, Victor Julius Director Scott. His name is Joe Montreal.
All right.
He goes to Cinema Wasteland, and this is how he tells the story. In the vendor's room, and you know how some, and I'm not going to name names, and I only have a suspicions, but some of the vendors for the companies, for the independent companies, are about being in your face and edgy. And he tells me, it's like, yeah, I was walking by this table and this guy goes, hey, asshole, you should buy our fucking film. And he doesn't react that well to that.
Right.
So he completely ignores and moves on to the next table.
Right.
He's always been he's a werewolf by night, big werewolf fan for the entire time I've known him. There's these people at this table. Right there in the center of the table, they have a movie called The Wolf Hunter. It's a VHS clamshell, yellow cover. I know I've posted it before. It is probably the most DIY backyard thing that I had seen at the time.
Yeah.
But it had to do with werewolves. So he picks that up and he brings it back. Show me this when we watch it. Find out later. I mean, we're talking about as DIY as you could possibly get.
Yeah.
Watching this film, and it was so evident to me that the people who made this film were having fun.
And it seems like
they were loving what they were doing.
Probably cared about it too.
Cared about it and put just maybe yes, maybe they didn't have the resources.
Right.
But you could tell they were putting everything that they had into it.
Yeah.
They were completely devoted to telling their story, showing their story, and making the best film that they were capable of making. And at that point, A, I fell in love with that picture.
Okay.
B, I turned my friend and goes, why are we not doing this?
Right.
We could be doing this. We could be having that kind of fun.
Yeah.
We used to do things like this before. I don't know if they agreed or not, but I started writing.
Yeah.
Pretty much my superhero origin story.
So, okay, well, yeah, that answers actually my first question was, where did you get your start? And I think that that pretty much covers it.
All right.
So now, okay, as a director, where do you currently draw your inspiration from now? Is it what you're seeing on television and in the theaters now, or is it something that maybe you've read in a book, or like you said, the comic books or the Dungeon Master, playing out scenes from Dungeons and Dragons? Or where do you, when you sit down to start a story, to start a script, where do you pull your inspiration from?
Well, I think my first script was never, I never produced it because my first idea was, and I think all of my ideas have started like this. Before I write something, what materials is going to be available to me? What people are going to be available to me? And at that time, you know, I just turned to my friend and goes, we should be doing this. And I thought, well, I can get him and I can get two of my other friends.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we're going to want to do something horror. And then I thought, oh, vampires would be good. It's like, but we don't know many women.
Right.
I don't think any of us wants to bite each other on the neck. So let's cast that monster.
Right.
So the next monster, it's like, zombies. There you go. I'll write something with zombies. So I hadn't read any of the books on screenwriting.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote this epic, or at least I consider it an epic, based around, mostly around like locations that I knew I could find. And I even had the hubris to think, oh, okay, I'm sure I can find some actresses. We'll put some female characters in there.
Right.
But
because you're a big director now. You're a writer and a producer and a director now. So
producer and director now, yeah.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you be able to find a couple chicks?
Yeah, why not? You know. I had dated occasionally.
Yeah.
I had convinced some women to spend time in my company,
Right.
But turns out completed writing the script, and as I said, I hadn't read any books on script writing or suggestions, and then I started taking a look at those. It's like, wait, what's this thing here about keep your cast small? It's like, I've got like 8 primary characters. Okay, what's this thing about limiting your locations to 2 or 3? It's like, I've got like a dozen locations.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but they wait were all... a minute.
They were all gorilla shoots, so it didn't really have to be, you know, I mean, if you're doing it on a small budget, as long as you can get to the location that you're looking for, I mean, really, there's no permits and stuff like that, so I'd imagine it would be as far as your imagination could take you, basically.
Yeah. Well, I did come to the realization that if I wanted to make this, because I was very happy with the script, and if I wanted to make it to the quality that I wanted to, I would need some resources. Mm-hmm. So a little bit known to me, my friend, good friend, and who I said was the actor, Victor Drillich, director, he had submitted something to like a local newspaper, and it got listed that we were looking for people who were interested in, you know, being part of making this film.
Okay.
And at that point, we got contacted by, his name is Jeff Meyer. He is, I refer to him as the go-to guy in the Syracuse filmmaking scene. If there's something going on in film in Syracuse at any level, he's there to help.
All right.
And I got a lot of, we met with him, and we got a lot of good advice. And one of them was, you know, you're probably going to need to start out a little smaller. This may be beyond your scope at first. I didn't even own a camera at the time. So it was probably good advice.
Well, that makes it hard to film a movie if you don't own a camera.
Well, you know, I knew people with cameras.
Okay.
And then I quickly learned is you need to own your, you know, I know you can rent equipment, and that's highly suggested at a certain budget level, but for just starting out, you know, having your own camera is helpful. So after that, I went back to the drawing board with the whole script process. I thought of concepts that I could do, you know, based on my limited means. And inspired the character of Victor Juliet was originally, I mean, he doesn't play off as, but it was originally inspired by Charles Band.
Okay.
Charles Band was, because of the Video Zones, he was always up in front. He was always telling you about all these new wonderful things that he's going to be bringing you.
Right.
And I just took it to a ridiculous end with the character of Victor Juliet. So that's another part of my continuing inspiration from Full Moon.
All right. So, okay, well, you keep bringing up Charles Band, so I'll ask you, your overall favorite director and your favorite movie from said director, would it be a Charles Band movie, or is it somebody completely different?
I could tell you what my favorite Charles Band film is, or the film that is the most Charles Bandiest of all the Charles Band's films, which would be Blood Dolls.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it really incorporates everything that I loved about the story, about him as a filmmaker and the stories he would tell, just full of freaks and dolls and just general weirdness, but still fun. He's never made, to my knowledge, never made a dark horror film. I mean, he's like a Roger Corman. He's always been, they're always been fun. You know the difference. You know, there's the horror films that, you know, I'm not in the mood to watch this. This is going to depress the hell out of me. I mean,
He's almost more of a dark humor director than an actual horror director.
Well, you don't sit down and watch The Mist for fun or Martyrs for fun, but you you still want to watch something horror, you put on Subspecies, you put on Puppet Master, you know.
Yeah, I think Puppet Master would probably be his most popular, you know, film franchise.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, because I've seen, one and two, I stopped after that, but then I got The Littlest Wife.
Wait. You've never seen three?
No. I'm sure they're probably all on Tubi, but yeah, I've definitely seen one and two, and then I have The Littlest Reich. But I thought Littlest Reich was a trip. It was just fun.
Two things. One, Littlest Nicholas Reich for me, because, as I said, they're all the Charles Van Pomoon films, particularly the Paramount area, were always fun. Always fun horror. They maintained a light tone.
Well, a little bit,
I think The Littlest Reich was completely, totally different. And I, as someone who, you know, okay, because this is the thing, because after three, because you watch Puppet Master 1 and 2, where the puppets are the villains. In 3, they are the heroes and continue, therefore, on further for the rest of the franchise as the heroes. So it was rather jarring to see them as the villains, let alone as Nazis, in The Littlest Reich. But I highly recommend Puppet Master 3. And it is one of those films that are the epitome of his work in that era.
Okay, so in other words, I screwed up and stopped too early.
No. No one's watched everything.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to, you know, it's very easy to get to a certain place and go, there's how many more of these?
Yeah.
And you being a podcast host, it's about, you know, you, from what, you know, I've been a listener since day one.
Right.
And I've enjoyed your show. And you bringing in a variety of films is what has kept my interest.
And that's one thing I definitely try to do now. By the time this comes out, I don't even technically know if we're in seasons anymore, but when we come back from hiatus, this season is going to be a little bit more controversial. So in terms of the films that we picked, or the films that we pick are controversial, I guess I should say that. So, okay, but I guess maybe I interrupted you. So is Charles Band your favorite director, or is there another favorite director, and what would that movie be from the director?
Oh, goodness. I don't think I could ever say I had one particular favorite. Mm-hmm. I don't think one outranks them all in my favor. I favor particular ones for particular kinds of work.
Okay.
You know, depending on where I want to go, like I said, I'm not always in the mood to watch, you're not always in the mood to watch a Martyrs.
Yeah.
Or maybe you want something that's a little stronger than a Puppet Master film. It depends what mood I'm in. I mean, I can name off names, but if I'm not in the mood for that, that's not the... I'm not always in the mood for a Luc Besson film.
Right.
You know, I love some of his, I love his work, but I'll need a, let me think, like a Mark Polona. Sometimes I need a Mark Polona.
Okay.
Sometimes a Bigfoot versus zombies.
Yeah.
Sometimes I need an actress on screen calling out, "Help us, Bigfoot. Help us," you know? Sometimes
right.
You need that. Or sometimes you need I'm blanking out on him. Sometimes you want to go dark, and then there's, always hate when you have to go to the computer during one of these things.
Mm.
All right. Sometimes you need a Dustin Mills who has incredibly dark or artistic films, like Apple Card.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen any of his films, but... You know, sometimes you want to go to the depths.
All right.
So it all depends on how I feel at that moment.
So almost kind of Gaspar Noé, or maybe even, I don't know if you could call Argento, you know, depths, but I mean, like...
what's the other Italian...
Fulci? Oh, Bavio. Okay.
Earlier in this year.
Bavio.
And I was just consuming everything Bavio and even some of his son's work. I started off the year with something Red Lace. Oh, Black Lace.
Oh, yeah. Flies on Black Lace, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and just gorgeous use of color in cinematography.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes I want that. It's like, I don't care what the story is about. It could be a you can turn off the subtitles. You can have it on mute. I just want to enjoy the slush colors. So.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, well, so that's my long about way of telling you I don't have a particular favorite director.
You have.
Who I'm feeling like at the time.
Gotcha. Okay, that's fair enough. So, you don't have a favorite actor or a favorite director, but if you could pick any actor or actress from past, present, or future, well, not necessarily future because you don't know if they're an actor or actress yet, but if you could pick one actor or actress to work with, no matter what the budget would be, who would that actor or actress be?
Okay. I gotta tell you, the thing I enjoy most when I've made films is just simply working with friends. One of the things that I did when I made, I know I keep dropping it, Victor Juliet's Director's Cut. Instead of making roles, I didn't know any actors.
Right.
Or anyone even that considered themselves actors or a would-be actor. So instead of trying to get Tom Camardello to play Pete the Heavy powerful right-hand man for Victor Juliet. So instead of trying to make one person be another person, I just made the character like the person that I knew.
Okay, fair enough.
It's like, hey, we role-played a lot together, so I knew what kind of characters he was comfortable playing. So when he plays the character, it comes off as acting.
Yeah.
And remember, Jessie Bardoff, she plays Rachel Ward in the same film. And she used to work with me. And I remember we were talking about snack foods one day, and there was some particular snack food, and it got a reaction out of her. Like one of those nearly orgasmic shudders you get when you really have enjoyed something. And I said,
okay,
that is going, and I pointed to, you're going to do that in the movie. And then I made her character into, it's like, I know, I've worked with you, I know you, I understand your personality. We're bringing that all into your character.
All right.
I'm getting around to my point here. So
okay.
I've always enjoyed working with friends, and I've been fortunate enough now to actually make friends who are actors and have experience and knowledge and technique. And, if I had to name one right now, and I've spent some time at different conventions with her, and I've always enjoyed her company, but I've never had the opportunity to shoot something with her. So I would say, top of my head, Greta Volkova.
Okay.
She is known for the previous film that I mentioned, Zombies, Bigfoot versus Zombies, but she was for Mark Polona.
All right.
But she was actually the lead in Mark Polona's film, Sharkenstein.
Okay. All right.
Have you seen Sharkenstein?
No, I can't say I've had the pleasure.
It is a... You can actually find it now for $5 in the Walmart bargain bins. So
really? Okay.
It's the title tells you everything you need to know about it.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Mark Polona?
A little bit, yes.
Previously referred to as the Polona brothers, the twin directors. In fact, their first film was, they often act in their films, and they take advantage of the fact that they were twins.
Right.
They played dual roles in films or use it as an effect. I'm a big fan of his too.
Okay.
So, but yeah, an opportunity to work with a friend and a talented actress like Greta. I know, as a horror guy, you should be saying, oh, give me Bruce Campbell or give me Mila Jovovich, who, as a Luc Besson fan,
right,
definitely, yes. But just having the opportunity to work with friends, that's what the appeal is for me.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair answer. I can't discredit you for saying that. So now I got one more question for you. We know your start from being a dungeon master and a comic book fan, and we know your favorite director is Charles Band, you got your start watching Charles Band movies. With that in mind, do you have any upcoming projects that you want to announce, or is there anything that you're trying to wrap up, or is there anything else you need to get off your chest right now?
All right. So, for the future, generations of Extreme Horror Replay listeners who have gone way back in the archives to listen to this, to listen to one of the early episodes.
Right.
I will say, you know, in the future, you will be able to see a film that I'm tentatively titling Avalation. It's a dark fantasy.
Okay.
It's a work in progress. It's going to have one advantage that most of my films don't have. It's actually going to have a budget.
Oh, okay.
my other films have never had a budget.
Right.
Everything I've done has been out of pocket. And the only reason I currently have a budget is I'm selling off a vast assortment of products on eBay, and it's been successful so far.
All right. Well, very
so,
cool.
Once, you know, curfew is lifted and the pandemic has lifted.
Yeah.
And we kill off the last of the murder hornets.
Put out all the fires in Australia. And
yeah, and the fires were off in Australia, and, you know, probably zombies next. But, you know, as I said, we're talking to the audience in the future.
That's about what we're expecting for this year, so.
Yeah, you can expect to see the tentatively titled Ablation, a dark fantasy by director Michael Allen Fitzgerald that actually looks better in his previous work because there was some money involved.
All right, that well, may, that's cool.
That may not be the whole title. I might shorten it just to Ablation.
Okay, so can you give us a brief plot summary of that, or do you want to keep that under wraps?
I will tell you what everyone I've told about it. Thing is, a classic tale about a man, of a boy who loses his heart, and this time it's in a literal sense. He oddly survives the evening, and he finds help understanding a new landscape that he hasn't, a new world that he hasn't been subjected to before. It's about me throwing every odd character idea I can at the wall and seeing what sticks. Gonna have fun with lots of costumes, and it's gonna be another thing where I invite way too many characters into a world, but we're gonna make this one happen.
Okay, well that's cool then. So
thank you.
All right, you said it was Ablation.
Ablation, yes.
Ablation.
It's,
okay.
Medical. I bet if you ask Nancy, she can tell you exactly what that means, but she's not right here right now. It's the removal of an organ.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So, all right. Well, why don't you give yourself a shout out here? Where can we find you online if you want to be found, that is? Maybe give your eBay page a shout out. Yeah. So go ahead and take it away. What do you got out there?
All right. So you can find me, Michael Allen Fitzgerald, as Mike A. Fitzgerald on Twitter, also tagged as Fiendish Fitz. From there, I've got a link on my profile to the Fiendish Films store and V-store, and I usually also list whatever I'm selling on eBay. If it works for the audience, let every purchase you make is going toward me creating a new film. Hopefully you think that's all a good idea.
That's fair enough, you know, because people, you know, we don't have a Patreon, and actually you are... Well, we have one donator. I don't know who he is. He's never come forward. But you have been the only person to donate films to the podcast here. And I am extremely appreciative for that. But so you are also on Instagram.
I'm also on Instagram. That's the way you prefer to communicate.
Yeah, that's usually where we get in contact. Of course, now I've got your number.
I'm
so
Michael _Allen_Fitzgerald, because I'm just owning this name. And also, if you just anyone searches Fiendish Films, you're gonna find me pretty quickly.
Well, you know what? So, Michael, this is my first interview with anybody of any directing talent. So, first of all, I appreciate you for coming on, and I'm sorry for the technical difficulties a little bit earlier, but we got it out, ironed everything out, and got it taken care of. But I greatly appreciate you coming on. I greatly appreciate your support for our show. You know, when Ablation comes out, you know, hopefully it's in the very near future, and if the world isn't shut down again, we can get some people out there and potentially watch this on the big screen somewhere.
Oh, I'd be happy. I'd be happy if people watch it on the small screen, and I assure you, you know, once, if we get into production, you know, hopefully this year, you and Nancy are on at the top of the list to receive, well, screeners or whatever material we have to share. And it's shows like yours that I listen to that inspire me to continue.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it.
I can't be doing what I want to be doing every day. I cannot. Unfortunately, I only get to do it once every so often. But nearly every week, I can listen to you and Nancy talking about films I enjoy, the genre I love, the work that I want to be doing, and that continues to motivate me to go forward. So I thank you as well.
Oh, that is awesome. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. All right, sir. Well, now I'm all misty-eyed, so I'm not crying. You're crying. But I want to thank you again from the bottom of my heart for coming on here. You know, I've had guests, but it's never been an intimate discussion between two people. It's always been two people covering a film. So it was more, you know, analytical. And we've never had the opportunity to chit-chat. Now, like I said earlier, you and I have gone way back from, you know, the beginning of our show. So it was great to finally sit down and talk to you, even if it is from, you know, 2,000 miles away or whatever it is, whatever we are. But anyway, so thank you from the bottom of my heart. I will definitely pass on your kind words to Nancy. Yeah, I again, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on, sir.
Thank you very much. And I know that, you know, I've mentioned a number of names of some fine people that I both work with or just look to work with. Please reach out to me, and I can tell you that with the experience that I've had with this interview, I imagine they would be equally as honored be guests on your show.
All right, I can do that. We'll see how this one goes first, and then we'll see how if we can get some more directors in here. Some of your
I'm always here to help.
I appreciate it. So thank you very much. And again, from the bottom of my heart and my little gore head, thank you for coming on here and speaking with me today.
And I also want to thank the gore heads because I know that I can ramble. So thank you. Thank you very much if you got to the end of this episode. Thank you very much. In fact, anyone who got to the end of this episode, okay, Harry, let's do something quick. Let's do something quick. I know we gotta go.
Yeah.
Okay, give me a word. Give me just first word that pops into your head.
Audio.
Okay. So if you listen, sat through this whole episode and through me ranting, DM Todd on Instagram or Facebook and put in the word audio. And a week after this episode dropped, you're gonna pick somebody who DM'd you with the winning word audio, and you're gonna get their name and address, and I'm gonna send them out a DVD Blu-ray prize pack.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Right. Yeah.
I know you got some contests going on as well.
Yeah.
Things upcoming. I'm just gonna add to it. So.
All right. Fair enough.
I'll let you go now. Remember, keyword audio, DM, direct message here. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much, sir. And we'll be talking to you.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Welcome back, Goreheads, to this special edition episode of Extreme Horror Replay, where we are highlighting some of the best and brightest upcoming short film and micro-budget directors. After talking to our first guest, I now have our second on the phone. His name is Jeff Kapp. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm well, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. Now, you and I go back a little ways. In the restaurant business, but
right.
I mean, obviously, currently you're out of that situation. But why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Tell me and the audience a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, all right. So I want to say it's close to 5 years now. I started dabbling into, you know, in the filmmaking. I came from being a musician from basically eighth grade until about I was 23, I want to say. The moment I found out I was having a kid, I kind of stopped that whole whatever, that project or whatever, and decided to just focus on being a dad. And then about when my daughter was about 6 months, I was, you know, craving that creative release. And I had, where I was working at the time, I had met my, who's now a co-owner of our company, Vigilant Entertainment, Shane. He was a former actor out of New York, Florida, Chicago, and he just kind of filled my head with all these stories about the, you know, the industry, and got really intrigued with it, really interested. And then it just so happened that a girl that worked with us, she was going to MSU to be for a screenplay writing.
Okay.
So she kind of showed me how to format scripts. And when I was in a band, I wrote all the lyrics to all the songs. So I already had a passion for storytelling.
Right.
But then I just transferred it over to film, and I haven't stopped since. We just kind of took off. It wasn't until we were in the pre-production of our feature film, Scapegoat, that Shane finally did come on and join the company with us. But we'd worked with him as an actor for a project or two beforehand.
Okay.
And yeah, he had a lot of knowledge, you know, great guy, one of my best friends. So yeah, he joined the company with me. Yeah, ever since then we've been doing short films. We did our first feature film, Scapegoat, which should be out later this year, if not early next year, in stores and streaming platforms.
Okay.
And yeah, we have another feature that we're in pre-production right now on. So
okay, well,
kind of me in a nutshell, I guess.
Scapegoat, I've you know, obviously you showed me the teaser for that, and I knew it was going to be a feature film, but I didn't know you were working on a second feature, so.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That one's going to be called Locker 42.
Okay. Oh, no. Yeah, you did tell me about that one. That's right. Okay. So, now, you gave us a little bit of an overview about coming from a musical background and a little bit of the lyrical and musical writing, but what was your first jump into the filmmaking?
So Shane and I worked at a clothing retailer at the time, and there's just so many stories that you can pull from working in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as any customer service industry. But we came up with this idea for a series, and it was called Grace Period. And I ended up writing like 8 or 9 episodes for the series, and then we pitched it to one of his friends who owns a production company, which they have now grown to be Emmy Award and a couple other awards.
Okay.
We pitched it to them. They liked it, but they needed to have more talent to it, like more trusted individuals. And with that being our first time doing anything, they weren't just going to give us, you know, the rights to use their name on stuff or anything like that. So we just kind of set out to start writing and creating as much as we can to start getting that resume built.
All right. Yeah.
So the first thing I wrote was like a comedy series.
They don't want to just throw money at anybody.
Right. Exactly. So yeah. So comedy series was the first thing that we did. Then after that, it was the short film. Our first short film we did was called 3 AM. That was one that had Shane in it.
Okay.
That was like a psychological thriller. Guy wakes up at 3 AM, exactly 3 AM, and can't figure out why, so he starts checking around his house, and we had things happen to him that could either be coincidence or there could have been somebody in the house.
Okay.
So it's jump scares, suspense, stuff like that. Yeah, so that was our first short, and then we jumped into another comedy called Friendly Advice. Loved it. It was well written. The actors that we got were amazing. It was funny. It got some nominations, but we just, at that point, we were still so new. We knew nothing really about cinematography, lighting, stuff like that. But we did know how to write, and that's what people enjoyed out of it.
Okay.
And we jumped that right into a big feature film, Scapegoat, that got distribution before we even started, you know, filming. And it was just a huge learning curve.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Now, and you said the Scapegoat. Now, I know you just dropped the... Now, is that your final poster art?
Could be.
Okay.
We're coming up on the times about 3 years ago when we started filming, so I'm just sharing some memories. We do have, hopefully, a decent announcement here in the next month about it. So we're just kind of getting people re-familiar with it.
Okay. Now, I know you have shared with me who your favorite director is, but obviously nobody out there in podcast land knows your favorite director and your favorite movie from that director.
Gosh, I don't have just one, though. That's the issue. Like, if we're talking horror, I always loved Wes Craven growing up.
Okay.
His films were what I kind of started out with. So, yeah, that's I guess, my favorite horror director. If we want to go all time, I would say all time would be Christopher Nolan, though.
Oh, so okay. So that was not who I was expecting.
Who were you expecting?
I seem to remember you mentioning J.J. Abrams.
Abrams is good, especially since he stopped using so many lens flares.
Uh-huh.
But, no, I like his mindset, but I do feel like he cops out here and there and uses time travel to finish up a story.
Okay.
So
when he hears this, he's never going to call you.
I never expected this. No, but he's still a very good director. I do like a lot of the stuff that he does. His company, Bad Robot, that's a good company. I like films that like really have in depth and twists, and he seems to be able to do that quite well with all of his underlining tones and underlining like messages. I do dig that with him. But no, Nolan is still, I think, right up there as number one. David Sandberg, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
You'd have to mention a movie.
So he started with Lights Out. Lights Out was his first feature film, followed by Annabelle Creation, and then okay. He got hired to do Shazam.
Okay.
So right. A little bit of a jolt in genre, but I liked him because he came up kind of like what I'm doing. He went from no-budget filmmaking. It was just him and his wife.
Uh-huh.
He created, if you look him up on YouTube, there's just so many short films that he did, just the two of them, and they're so good.
Yeah.
Like Lights Out got a feature film, and it was only, I think, a two-minute short film. So, yeah, he has a really good story, and he's very open about his process and what he does.
All right.
Really after that with him.
And I think you have mentioned him before, actually, now that I think about it. He's the guy that kind of, he gives you tutorials on how...
Yeah.
Yeah, you have mentioned him before.
Yeah, no, he's. If I were to want to pick a career path, even though, no career path's ever the same in this industry, it would definitely want to follow his.
All right. Well,
maybe minus big budget comic book movies, though.
Right. So, okay, kind of paralleling on the director, if you could pick any actor, present or past, to act in one of your movies, short film, feature film, whatever it may be, who would it be?
Matthew Lillard. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, well, come on. It's a screen, baby.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, we talked about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I would, gosh, I am hoping so much that one day I'll be able to work with him.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's played some pretty iconic characters. I mean, 13 Ghosts wasn't exactly a great movie, but I mean, obviously playing Stu in Scream, that movie was iconic for, reigniting a genre, and it kind of kick-started a lot of careers, his included, because he'd played some bit parts or some smaller stuff here and there, but that movie, launched him into stardom, and then he played Shaggy, on the Scooby-Doo movies. But yeah, Matthew Lillard, I think, yeah, that would definitely be a good choice and a good guy to get on your films.
I can't forget SLC Punk too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that one goes back too. So
now, even his TV roles have been great. Like, he played this character, criminal on Criminal Minds, and that was amazing. Like, he did really well. He was just on that TV show Barskins, I want to say. He had a small role on that as one of the villains, and he was really good on that too. Just having him, on set working with him would be amazing.
Okay, yeah, I would. I think you mentioned him before, and I told you I was going to crash the set
somebody else might have to direct that day, because I might just be standing there like, you
awestruck. Yeah. Where do you draw your inspiration from? I mean, when you're writing a story, or when you're thinking of a story, where does the inspiration come from?
Honestly, it's so sporadic. It can be anything. Like, if I'm thinking back to like every project I've done, that short comedy series was just because we were working in a place that it was, you know, it gave us inspiration to write. That short film, 3 a.m., that honestly, the inspiration just came from, hey, what can we do with a dude with a camera, you know, the director, and one actor? And that's how that came about. So we just wrote a story contained inside a house. Scapegoat, though, that one was interesting because originally we just wanted we had just got a new camera. Mm-hmm. We had a GoPro as well, and we just went out in the woods behind the house I lived in at the time, and I had the camera and I was just chasing the DP, and we did a scene where we just cut this action chase sequence together, and it looked really good.
Yeah.
And well, we have to do something with this. What can we do? And over the span of like a month or so, it was us just tossing back and forth ideas of who's this guy, who's he running from, and then we filmed the first couple like pilot episodes, I guess, for a YouTube series that we wanted to do with it, and then it kind of took off from there. It just went to we filmed like this little teaser, like a 59-second teaser for it, and it started to get a lot of attention, and we're like, screw it, let's just do a feature with this. And yeah, it took off, and we started casting people, and we took the story from two or three people, expanded it out to seven main characters, and then yeah, I want to say it took us maybe another month to really nail down the feature script, and we casted for it, and overwhelmed by how many people submitted for it, and we were at like a film festival in Frankenmuth, and we got contacted by the distribution company that we ended up going with, and they asked, hey, you know, we like the marketing for this, you're doing really well with it, it looks really interesting, you have somebody attached to it that we worked with before,
yeah.
We would like to distribute this, and at first we turned them down because we, A, knew nothing about it,
right?
B, we didn't know if we should even pull it off, but then as we went through it, we needed a budget, obviously, because we wanted to put as much into it as we could, and we decided that if we were going to get the budget that we wanted, which was only about $5,000 total, we needed to have a reason for people to give us their money, to a show of return, a profit return type thing. And
right, absolutely.
So we assigned the distribution contract and brought on three investors. And filming was a bit of a process. We hit every single hiccup that you could even think of.
You're right.
I went through a divorce during it. Our original DP ended up moving to Atlanta, so I became the director/DP.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it was just, it's been a process. Our original audio guys who were editing the audio and composing the score, they screwed us. They took the budget that we had for audio, left, sold the rights to that score to somebody else.
Ouch.
So that left us high and dry, and that's why it's taking so long
yeah.
to get to the point that we are. Lots of learning experience, though.
Right, yeah.
So
at least now you know better what not to do in the future.
No, exactly. And since then, like I said, we've done about five short films since then. We're launching into this feature film, which this feature film is the biggest thing that we've done. We're taking a major step forward with this, working with Hollywood talent, you know, getting the biggest budget we've ever had. So yeah, all of this has just been a big, the last 3 years alone have just been crazy.
So now, well, you mentioned the film festival up in Frankenmuth. You have some awards behind your name. Now, does that help in the process as far as getting recognized from major companies or actors or, you know, anything along those lines?
Not necessarily, especially with the still where the level that I would say that I'm at. It looks good on a resume. Like we're building this portfolio to present to investors for the next feature. So it'll be a thing on the resume for that. So it helps and it looks good, but it's not, you know, hey, it's not even like the awards that we have won. We're extremely proud of it. They aren't like major awards though.
Right. Okay.
Not to talk down on those companies or anything like that, but it's just not a major award. So
right.
So yeah, like I said, it looks good on resume. We can say we're award-winning producers, directors, production company now, but that's mainly the main extent of it.
All right, and then now when you start your process, when you're thinking of a movie, well, run through the process of how that works. I mean, do you go in looking for actors first, or do you go to the story and then build around the story, or is it more of a let's see what kind of budget we can get and then build from there?
It honestly, it all depends on the. It's all subjective to the project. Obviously, the story comes first. I don't want to take various. So I'll. I mean, going back to Scapegoat, the first actor we brought on, Heath Satoris. He was brought on before there was even a full script, only because I had worked with him on the project beforehand, and I had a very specific role in mind that I wanted him to do.
Okay.
But besides that, I've not casted anybody until, like, the story's done. My producing partner, Shane, and I, we will make sure the story's what we want to do. Typically, at a time, I have 2 to 3 projects ready that I want to go with, and between him and I, we'll decide on what we do next.
All right.
From there, if it's, like I said, I love doing micro-budget to no-budget, to where if I know that I have $100 to work with, I'm going to find the people that love to do the film just for film and bring them on, and we'll go with it from that. I'll find actors. If sometimes, I mean, a lot of the times, they'll work for, you know, food, the passion for it, stuff like that, to where, yeah, we'll cast via who wants to do the project for what we have.
Right.
This feature, though, that we're doing, Locker 42, we got the script. I co-wrote this script with my buddy Nolan Brand. He's actually up in Canada. We met on a previous project, but him and I wrote this together. And then, like I said, we've casted some roles right now, mm-hmm. but we're waiting to cast the rest until we get that full budget, so we know exactly what we're working with.
Gotcha. Okay.
And like I said, and that all depends on the project. Like short films, the most budget I've had for a short film, I want to say, is $2,000. And that's, you know, that's enough for me for a short film. I feel like doing no budget or micro budget really forces you to be creative.
Right.
And how you can pull stuff off. And that's what I love that.
Well, right. So, you know, even, I mean, you take a look at, you know, movies like The Evil Dead, you know, he did that on comparatively, it was a large budget, you know, as compared to you, but for a major motion picture, whatever it was, $50,000, and, you know, the actors are going home caked in blood every night because they couldn't afford to wash their clothes every night, you know? So, but yeah, it does force you to be creative. It forces you to make decisions and to work around that budget. So,
and when the producers were talking about the budget they want for this feature film, my first thought was, like, I have no clue what to do with all that money.
Yeah.
But then I just have to think on a larger scale of, now we can afford to do this, or we can afford to do that. And so, yeah, it's been, like I said, it's very subjective per project. And the last couple ones I've done, like, my daughter's been in it, so.
Right.
Yeah. So I said, just you, a lot of the times you just work with what you have and go from there.
All right. Well, perfect then. Okay. Well, you mentioned, obviously, Scapegoat is your first feature film. Mm-hmm. And you've hinted a little bit at Locker 42. What else have you got coming up? Any other upcoming projects?
The next short that we're going to release is called Antimask, and that's the one that just stars just my daughter.
Okay.
I did a film with her, a short film with her last year called Goodnight You.
I like that one. I don't want to give it away, but the ending got me.
and that's what I hear, which is, it's so funny because, like, I mean, and I hear this from every director who does horror, like, it doesn't work on you. So, like, you go into it blind, like, oh, crap, like, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Is this going to work on somebody? It doesn't work on me. I've seen it 1,000 times.
Right.
I was blown away by the support and the response of that, which is actually really funny because the short films that we have that won awards have less views than, like, this, Goodnight You, or the horror film that we did Still.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny. Those are, you know, growing in views every single day, but the award winners are just sitting in, like, the 700
here.
So, like, Antimask, like I said, will be the next short that we release. We're obviously in pre-production on Locker 42. Ideally, we wanted to shoot in fall, but then COVID-19, all that stuff happened, so we put a hold on it.
Right.
Just because it's wrong to go to try to find a budget when people are going on unemployment, and it just didn't sit right with us.
Yeah.
So we had backed off on that process, but we're getting rolling back on it. Like I said, the producers are putting together a really awesome pitch package for bigger investors. So I'm excited to see what that turns out. then besides that, we've just been writing a lot, man. Like, yeah, we have, I want to say, 3 short films written that we could tomorrow start filming,
right,
if we want to. But then we're writing another feature. This would be the first time that the producer, my producing partner Shane, and I are writing it together.
Okay.
He's a co-writer on it. It's called The Long Way Back, and it's different than what we've ever done before. It's a different genre than we've really done, so we're excited to see how that comes out.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Well, with the last little bit of time that we got left, shout out your production company, your YouTube, your Instagrams and stuff like that. Let everybody know where they can find you, where they can check out the films you've got out already.
For sure. All of it compiled into one spot is just vigilantfilms.com. From there, you'll find links to all of our personal sites, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. And then all the films that we have so far are going to be right there in the section as well, too. There's a little tab for films.
Okay.
So you just click on that and take you right to them. If you just want to, though, like, subscribe, Vigilant Entertainment on YouTube and also Instagram.
Very cool. So vigilantfilms.com, and that'll take you to whatever you need to find.
To everything. We have all of our personal stuff linked through that as well, too. There's a section called Connect. You click on that, it'll show you our pictures. I find it very important to also help, promote people that we've worked with. So we have a section for affiliates as well, too. Anyone we've really worked with on films.
Okay.
Put their profile stuff on there as well, too, to link up with them. Just hit Connect, and you'll find my Instagram, my Twitter, Facebook, all that. Same with the producer and everybody else that we've worked with.
All right. Very nice, brother. So, yeah, this is Jeff Kapp from Vigilant Films. He is a Michigan local, or a local Michigander. Yeah. So, vigilantfilms.com. Jeff, I want to appreciate you taking the time to talk to me on the second half of the first episode of the small budget or micro budget short films director spotlight. Yeah, I mean, that's it. So, sir, again, thank you very much. Make sure you keep in touch with me. And if there's anything you need tagged or promoted, or, I don't have the biggest following on Instagram or Twitter, but I'd be more than happy to do some reposts for you and, get your stuff out there whenever you need to.
I really appreciate that. You've done great for me so far with sharing, reposting, everything like that. So I really appreciate everything, and thanks for the time for chatting with me.
Absolutely. So, sir, I bid you farewell for now. Don't stay a stranger, and we'll be talking to you later. So again, thank you very much for coming on. And this is Jeff Kapp from vigilantfilms.com. Find all his stuff, find his shorts, find some trailers, some poster art, and go support local short filmmakers, film directors, friends. For Extreme Horror Replay and Jeff Kapp, I am Ben, and we will see y'all next time.